In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, March 22nd, 2013 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. This week, the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. And this week on the countdown, it's Battle of the Roberts. It's Robert Otto of Agilex in studio with me and Robert Shea of Grant Thornton. Gentlemen, it's great to see you. We're off to a little bit of a late start, so we'll start with number three. Bob, your third most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times. The headline is "The Most Overstretched Agencies According to Feds." And they looked at various agencies and pretty much are laying out who's really working hard already and then what may happen next because of sequestration.
Absolutely. In fact, the article talks about the results of a survey of over 690,000 employees in 292 agencies. And it really talked about the downsizing effects of the budget and, you know, the resources. And, you know, most of this is cause and effect. But really, it never gets to the core issue, which is the government is awful at managing change. And this whole, the agency managers and employees are great at building programs and building staffs, but they're not really good at downsizing and sunsetting things. And so they're thinking that in these reductions that the managers can convey to the staff adequately how you prioritize what work you do, and it just isn't happening. You can't just tell the employee, well, you got to do three people's parts of work versus your own. So what I find here is that the government's going to have this issue for the next decade, downsizing, and the government needs to figure out how to message and manage change better in all these agencies.
This gets at the core of something that you and I have talked about before, and I've talked about pretty extensively on that show, on the show, and that's the idea that it really is incumbent on Congress to encourage the agencies and help them however they can to really get a handle on all of the things that they do, and then Congress has to decide what they don't want the agencies to do anymore if they're going to get a handle on this workload. Is that a fair read, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's sort of draconian for the managers to immediately, let's cut travel, let's defer promotions, let's not do any training. They sacrifice the long term and the good of the employees for, well, I got to make the budget here, when they really ought to push back to Congress and say, okay, so let's prioritize if you're going to take out $150 million.
But Congress is part of the problem. I noticed one of the agencies, Immigration Customs Enforcement, in law, they have to fill a certain number of beds. So if they've deported all their illegals and there are no more left, they got to go find somebody to fill those beds. It's sort of there are a lot of these ridiculous requirements that they have to meet by law that force them to doing some of these more stupid cuts.
Bob Otto's third most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times, "The Most Overstretched Agencies According to Feds." And you can read that and all of our stories on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. Robert Shea, your third most important federal story, I think, is just a naked play for attention to get on the show more often.
How many times can we say, Francis?
Well, I think that was the goal of this. The headline is it's from the Wall Street Journal. Headline, "Pope Francis Celebrates Inaugural Mass." And I was grasping at straws to really try to figure out what this has to do with the federal government. Certainly you have a connection.
Well, first of all, you were Francis before Francis was cool.
So, well, and I was actually, technically, I was Francis before this guy was Francis.
Oh, really?
He's a very nice man, but his real name isn't Pope Francis.
Oh, I see. I thought you were going to say you were older than he was, in which case I was very sorry.
I'm certainly not older than him.
So this is a little bit of a curveball, but it in his inaugural, in the mass in which he was installed as Pope, he called on politicians, priests, and others in positions of power to protect society's weakest and poorest members. He said that secular and religious leaders must act as custodians for every creation of God. So he's calling on the world and political leaders, managers, to help the poorest, the weakest. And that's really one of the major roles of government. And it reminded me that America, the United States, is probably, not probably, it is one of the greatest servers of the poor in the world, not only domestically but internationally. Our programs are saving lives in the poorest and neediest countries in the world. I was looking at the president's malaria initiative. More than 28 million people protected as a result of spraying funded by the United States government. And if you look at the PEPFAR program, which is aimed at helping poor countries with AIDS, the U.S. directly supported life-saving treatment for more than 3.9 million men, women, and children, probably doing more to save and improve the lives of the poorest people on the planet than any other organization in the world.
You did it. You made a connection between
right.
the installation of the Pope and the federal government. Those programs are programs, too, that I have seen on any number of occasions, people that work in the nonprofit sector, NGOs and so on, using as best practices, demonstrating this is the way to do it, PEPFAR in particular.
We are leading the world in putting proven practices in place that are saving lives at a rate unprecedented.
You did it. I'm very impressed by the fact that you
Thank
connected
you.
The story. Pope Francis celebrates inaugural mass, your third most important federal news story of the week, to something having to do with the federal government. Robert Shea of Grant Thornton on the Federal News Countdown. That story and all of our stories linked now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When we come back, the second most important federal news story of the week is selected by Robert Shea and by Bob Otto on this week's Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Career move in technology? Start your search at PowerJobs.com, the new career site made for Washington's top talent. New on PowerJobs.com this week.
Senior Campaign Manager, Environmental Defense Fund, Cyber Operations Analyst, Northrop Grumman, and Health Policy Analyst, American Society for Radiation Oncologists. Check out these and other opportunities now at PowerJobs.com.
PowerJobs.com, finally, a career site made for you.
Join Fisher House Foundation's team of champions at the Marine Corps Historic Half on May 19th in Fredericksburg, Virginia, to make a true difference in the lives of military service members, veterans, and their families when they need it most, during hospitalization for an unexpected injury, illness, or disease. Team Fisher House makes raising funds and awareness for the foundation easy and fun. Race slots are available until April 8th. Find out more at teamfisherhouse.org/MCHH.
The Washington Wizards are back.
Spins, fades, banks, scores, and one. Okafor.
Up court to Crawford. No-look pass. Ariza. Stump. Durant.
Crawford drives baseline. Whips it in the corner. Sheldon Mack for three.
Single-game tickets are on sale now. Call 202-661-5050. That's 202-661-5050. Or buy your tickets online at washingtonwizards.com/tickets.
Start here at Optimos. We envision America having confidence in their government to provide quality services at the right price. We believe government contractors are part of the solution. In nearly two decades serving the federal government, Optimos has learned that smaller, smarter, faster, cheaper services and solutions can help make that vision a reality. Innovation should be incremental, configurable, quick, and affordable. And it should provide sustainable value to the government and the taxpayer. Smaller, smarter, faster, cheaper. It's how we think. It's what we do. Learn more at Optimos.com.
Here's Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, from the panel discussion, The Federal IT Challenge, Software Defined What? Brought to you by VMware.
The most important thing to remember is that software defined in the data center makes things so much more agile that many business processes are supported as a result. The business processes that require scalability, like expansion for either closing the books at the end of the quarter or the end of the year, or anything else that requires the business to scale due to periodic needs that they have. In addition, the agility supports this emerging concept called brokering, because the performance requirements, the scalability requirements, and the security requirements of the workload move with that workload. And they're more agile, so as they move to another service provider's cloud, the performance, scalability, and security capabilities go with it, and they're met rather than having to be manually recoded.
To hear the entire show, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. If you want the smartest young candidates, go where they are. The State Department explains its latest social media gambit to recruit people for its foreign service. Plus, Lockheed Martin jumps into the critical infrastructure protection business. It's ready to handle confidential information handed over by Homeland Security. Those stories and much more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This week's Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Robert Shea of Grant Thornton and Bob Otto of Agilex. And Bob, your second most important federal news story of the week is from FCW. The headline is, "Of Policy and Petabytes Shaping the Use of Big Data." And the consensus seems to be that agencies are getting a better handle on how to use big data, how to really analyze it and pull out the things that they want to know. The question that always sticks in my mind is, are they really getting good at deciding what it is they want to know and to what kinds of data they want to apply the analytics?
Well, Francis, we wouldn't even be having this conversation 5 years ago or 10 years ago because the tools weren't there to pull all this data and make it available, whether it's to your handheld device or to your mobile computer or whatever it may be. But the tools are there now, and what's really scary about this is very much like the technology that we went through in the 80s with distributed computing and personal computers and your handheld devices, the internet, et cetera. All of those technologies, when put into place, drive policy changes because now things are accessible that they weren't accessible before, and also organizational support. I mean, the CISO's positions were created as a result of access and availability and policy changes, CIO's jobs, you know, system administrators, things like that over a period of time. So now data, you can take all of these data files, whether they're structured or unstructured, pull all this information together and make it accessible to, you know, someone who has a handheld device. So what we're going to see here is a bunch of policy changes over the next 2 to 3 years, because privacy things are going to happen, and we're going to not want some of this data of people, places, and things in people's hands. So there's going to be a lot of change as a result of this access and new tool sets.
I'm imagining you, Robert Shea, at OMB a couple of years ago with access to this data that people have access to now and just salivating about the idea of being able to see this collected in one place and being able to sort through it, stuff that wasn't possible when you were there.
I know. I think the government has so much data, it tracks so much. What you could learn about what's working and what's not working, how to tweak something, share best practices, what's working and what's not. I think it's got great promise. I like how you started, though. We got to start with what question is it we're trying to answer before we find out whether or not there's usefulness here. And then, of course, the quality of the data is going to be a big concern.
The reason that I always go there, too, is because I keep hearing from industry, we can answer anything you want to know. We can formulate the analytics to pull anything out of the data that you want. And so that it seems to me that the questions then become the critical element of this. Is that right, Bob?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're capturing all this data, redundant data across the government. And one of the things people ought to be looking at is they ought to be trying to see where we have all this redundant data. And maybe we ought to shut down some of these programs that caused a lot of this redundant data. And maybe there's some of the savings in the government.
You'd also stop collecting it, right? Make it easier for people to deal with the government if you're not making them fill out so darn many forms.
Why do we need to have all this information about Francis out there anyway? If I Googled him 5 years ago, I might get a little bit of information. Now I get everything down to his shoe size.
Well, everybody wants to know about Francis these days.
Yeah. Why I'm getting the abuse on this program, I have no idea.
It's not abuse, it's all love. It's all love.
The idea of collecting the data, though, and stopping the collection of the data that we don't need or that is redundant, will have what kind of impact, do you think, if we can get to that point, Robert?
Well, if you're a grantee trying to access money to solve a major social problem, and you've got to fill out 10 different forms, 10 different ways, why not streamline that, making people fill out one form with only the most necessary data elements? I think that will reduce a lot of administrative burden, which is what, a lot of what drives the cost of these programs.
And gee, Robert, I mean, this is what the electronic health record was supposed to be between DOD and VA. I mean, conceptually, if you just have this one record with the information, everybody should be able to use it, right? We can't even agree on this.
The second most important federal news story of the week is selected by Bob Ottos from FCW, the headline of Policy and Petabytes Shaping the Use of Big Data. And you and your friends at Agilex are doing something that's pretty cool that I think you should tell us about.
Yeah, we're a young company, 6 years old. We're cool, and we like doing some really neat things. We have a 3.5-minute video about the services that we offer and some of the great work that we've done over the past several years for our clients. And if you go log on to www.agilex.com/safespot, we'll donate $1 for every time you go on there to the benefit of the SafeSpot Children's Advocacy Center in Fairfax County. And, you know, every morning, Francis, I go on and log on to that because I think it's a really cool thing.
You shouldn't tell people that you're cheating. It's for a good cause,
I don't blame you
for doing it.
We contribute to a lot of good organizations. So this is one that people ought to go on because it really does help.
All right, we'll put a link to that in the Federal News Countdown page at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When we come back, the second most important federal news story of the week is selected by Robert Shea on the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Looming budget cuts, expanded missions, greater public demand, and a changing workforce. Huge challenges for today's government agency leaders. These challenges present opportunities to maximize value and do better with less. With guidance coming from many directions, how can leaders determine what works best for their agencies? What are the game changers in the arena of driving value? And how can leaders expedite value optimization? Listen to Reimagining Government, Finding Opportunity in the Crisis, as part of the Expert Voices panel series sponsored by Booz Allen Hamilton, featuring top industry experts and leaders on Wednesday, March 27th at 1 p.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. For more information, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen, or visit the Expert Voices website at boozallen.com/expertvoices. That's boozallen.com/expertvoices.
Profile America, Friday, March 22nd. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 prohibited discrimination on the basis of sex as well as race in hiring, promoting, and firing. While this act is a famous landmark in the national effort to assure equality of treatment, its ban on sex discrimination was not in the forefront of the effort. On this date in 1872, the state of Illinois enacted the first such ban on discrimination. It came about through the lobbying of America's first female law school graduate, Alta Hewlett, who had been refused admission to the Illinois bar. Today, nearly 41% of employed women, 16 and older, work in management, professional, and related occupations, compared with just over 34% of employed males. Profile America is in its 16th year as a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
On Foodie and the Beast, mark your calendars for Saturday, March 23rd. We're going to Early Mountain Vineyards in Madison, Virginia for the first annual Oyster Festival. Of course, we'll be live taping the show, and there'll be great guests, lots of chowder, oysters, clams, and more. For info and tickets, visit earlymountain.com and join Foodie and the Beast live every Sunday at 11 a.m. on 1500 a.m.
Health scams. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. This'll cure you? Or make you lose weight? Not necessarily. Health scammers are good at taking your money and bad at delivering what they promise, so a smart shopper has to tell the difference between what looks good in the ad or on the net and what the product really is. At the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, Gary Cootie is an expert in detecting health fraud. He says that if it's an unproven or a little-known treatment, Ask your doctor.
Alarms should go off when you see words like new discovery or scientific breakthrough or secret ingredient or all natural miracle cure.
Because it's not just the money you can lose. Some of the fakes can be dangerous, and relying on the fakes can delay getting real treatment while the condition you want to treat just gets worse. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
The Office of Management and Budget's fiscal year 2014 budget guidance advised agencies to reduce their usual budget requests by 5% and overall IT spending by 10%. As these cuts take place, what will be the major priorities and opportunities in mobility, cybersecurity, cloud computing, big data, and other growing trends? Join AFSEA Bethesda March 27th as top federal technology executives discuss the future of federal IT in their annual budget preview. Register today at afseabethesda.org/marbreakfast. We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Bob Otto of Agilex and Robert Shea of Grant Thornton. And, Robert, your second most important federal news story of the week is headlined, House Oversight Committee Approves Multiple Bills on Government Operations. It's from Bloomberg Government. And this story, I mean, 13 bills the committee moved in one shot. Can't remember the last time I've seen a committee move that many at once. Is there significance in the number, or is there significance in what they moved, or some combination of both?
Well, there's often a bunch of small bills, but there's a lot of substance behind these. The Government Accountability Office Improvement Act, this gives GAO a lot more authority. The Government Spending Accountability Act, this, you know, gets at non-military travel spending. And the Excess Federal Building and Property Disposal Act, this, you know, tells the government what list your top wasted or underutilized properties, put them on the market, and sell them by a date certain. My only point in raising this is that despite the attention to all the discord in this city, there is quietly some work getting done. And I think that's... It might be a sign that things may be calming down a little bit.
Bob, that's what I took away from this piece also. The Freedom of Information Act bill, supported by both the chairman, Daryl Issa, the ranking member, Elijah Cummings, and this checklist that Cheryl Bolin of Bloomberg Government has in this piece, H.R. 1162, the GAO Improvement Act that Robert mentioned, co-sponsored by Issa and Cummings, the Excess Federal Building Act that he mentioned, Congressman Jason Chaffetz, Republican from Utah, Mike Quigley, Democrat from Illinois, co-sponsoring this bill. Are we being overly optimistic if we try to take positive cues from seeing things like this?
No, I actually think that they want to get some things done too as well. And so I really believe that this is a positive step forward, and I think we'll see a lot of positive things between now and September.
The positivity that is coming from the Hill, and we're having this vote-a-thon thing, that their Votorama is what they're calling it in the Senate today, and that's fine, and it's got a cute name and so on. But that's another element of this that's significant, because I can't recall the last time that a Senate majority leader of either party said, all right, we're just going to throw the gates open and we're going to allow and not everybody and his brother can vote on every amendment that anybody wants to put up there. But the significant number of amendments voted on today on the 2014 funding bill. And that seems to be, to me at least, to be another step toward regular order and the way things, I'm using air quotes, used to work around Washington. Am I right about that?
Yeah. Votoramas are common in budget debates. We just haven't had one in so long.
Okay.
That we don't remember what it looks like. That's exactly what's going on. It's Senator Murray, when she took over the budget committee, she said, I am going to have a budget bill on the floor because the Senate had gotten such a hard time from the House for not having voted on a budget. It is notable that the president's budget, 2 months out, has not been submitted, and so the both houses of Congress are moving out without having what is generally the organizing document around this debate.
Does that make any difference in the way this is formulated?
Absolutely. The major policy driver is absent, so they're making it up. So the president will come to the party late, and so we'll have a hard time getting his priorities reflected in the budget.
One of the things that we always point out on this station, and that my colleagues in other places in the media point out, when the budget request usually drops from OMB in middle of February, end of February, is that it is just a request and Congress will reshape it. And so it strikes me that maybe I would imagine that some kind of cue came from OMB to Senator Murray and her team about what they at least would like to see. So maybe what she's introducing might not be dramatically different than what we will see out of OMB in a couple of weeks.
I bet there are some lines of communication, but probably not as robust as you think or would hope. I mean, when the president submits his budget, he's got a PR document as part of it that says what his priorities are. It got a lot of nice pictures in it. But there's also a document that has the actual bill language in it. That's called the appendix. That's actually what the budget is, what they use to write the spending bills. And they don't have that yet. And they won't have it for a couple of weeks.
When that drops, then you've been in this situation before, Bob, where you see the budget and not necessarily the president's budget, but you see a budget. And then it's time to spring into action and figure out how you're going to execute on that budget. Given where we are budget-wise and given where we are just fiscally and what agencies are expecting, do you think the trajectory of this makes any difference for how people are going to try to get things accomplished inside the agencies?
I think that we're going to see, and I was talking to Robert about this in the July timeframe through October, we're going to see a lot of scurrying around to spend money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people right now are just holding back because they're not sure what they're getting in all of this. So I think that it'll be a real positive thing later this summer. At least, you know, from a lot of us who haven't seen things happen in the last year, we'd like to see some stuff happen.
When we get back to your story, Robert, among this group of bills that the Oversight Committee is sending to the floor, any of these, which do you think have the potential to have the most impact on somebody working in government on a day-to-day basis?
I think the it depends on where you are. The Government Accountability Office Improvement Act is going to give investigators at GAO new tools to get information out of Congress. So it will genuinely strengthen the folks, the hand of the folks at GAO. The Excess Federal Building Act, there are people who are going to have to identify the highest value, least utilized properties and actually put them on the market. And the money from the sales of those properties go back to the agencies. So this is something that wouldn't happen in the past. If you sold a building, agency didn't get any of the money. Here, this is going to really incentivize them to identify big ticket buildings, put them on the market, and get a return on those sales.
Robert Chase, second most important federal news story of the week is from Bloomberg Government. The headline is House Oversight Committee approves multiple bills on government operations. It's linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And the most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by Robert Chase and Bob Otto, are what you'll learn about next on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, from the panel discussion, The Federal IT Challenge, Software Defined What? Brought to you by VMware.
One of the main concerns across federal agencies is the type of data that they have in their data centers, the privacy information, and even more sensitive and national security information that data loss prevention policies can be defined in the software-defined data center and block things from happening, not automatically, and also notify security folks to go look into and analyze situations as they occur.
It's almost like a user log can be developed just based on those policies saying, well, who took the data and when, and what did they do with it, and however often is necessary.
To try and boil it down to its most basic, it's going from a reactive approach to security to a proactive approach to security, which is a very powerful shift.
To hear the entire show, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Hundreds of thousands of furloughs and cuts to every agency program. Sequestration is officially a reality for federal employees, but many questions remain. How exactly will agencies implement the furloughs? How many unpaid days off can feds expect? And what will the cuts mean for contractors and industry? Federal News Radio is your source for the most up-to-date information on sequestration. Find it all at federalnewsradio.com/sequestration. And while you're there, sign up for our breaking news email alerts.
Join the Coalition for Government Procurement on April 17th for their training conference, Continuing the Dialogue, at the Crystal Gateway Marriott in Arlington, Virginia. Hear how strategic acquisition can both improve the efficiency of government and provide an opportunity for businesses to offer innovative solutions. Any government and industry professional from across the procurement community should attend this event. Don't miss this opportunity to learn and network with your colleagues from government and industry. Register now at the Coalition for Government Procurement's website, thecgp.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week with the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Robert Shea and Bob Otto. And we're up to
number one.
And Bob, your most important federal news story of the week is from NextGov, and it's kind of ties in with the story that Robert had at number two. The headline is Oversight Committee Passes IT Reform Act Giving CIOs Budget Authority, and this is just hallelujah for your colleagues in the CIO community, I imagine.
Absolutely. This article is something I've been passionate about for the last 6 years and talking to the CIOs. You know, it does really two things. It gives the CIOs authority to do their job. And at the same time, it tries to fix the IT acquisition process. So here's what I really like about this draft bill. One CIO per agency. That means that bureaus within an agency can have multiple CIOs, multiple directions. So that's goodness. Plus, it gives then the project veto and budget authority to the CIO, which Roger Baker at VA and I at Postal Service were the only two who had that capability. And it allows for the CIO to take and shift money between programs to do bulk investments that are good for the organization. Then the last piece that's good is it changes the ways that agencies contract for services and solutions and drops the whole idea of this cheapest wins, but brings in criteria like best value and quality, which really support things like the agile methodology. So those are the good things I like about it. The things I don't like about this bill is it made the CIOs a presidential appointee, and Robert and I were talking about, so where would that lead to? And my personal opinion in this is that then the president, after being elected, has to then assign people who help them get elected into these jobs, and sometimes they don't have the qualifications to do that job.
We were having that conversation. I reminded Bob that I was a presidential appointee and consider myself highly qualified for the job I held.
I'm certain he wasn't implying that all presidential appointees were not qualified for their positions.
My only concern on that point is that they not be Senate confirmed, because that'll just delay dramatically. If you look at the CFOs today, they're only a handful Senate confirmed CFOs in place, leaving no one really at the head of those organizations. So you just got to be careful not to politicize it too much and make sure that you can actually get some people in those jobs.
Well, and that takes us potentially down the whole road of the confirmation process in general, which I'm not sure this story warrants, but the process there of bringing people in and giving them this authority is really the core of this, it seems to me, Bob. And you cited Roger and yourself as examples. And, I mean, I hear Roger's name thrown about as the example of this, because he was the sitting one until just a couple of weeks ago.
Absolutely.
And that's the example that everybody wants. The issue then becomes, are all the people who are in those jobs now ready to take on that responsibility? And the feedback that I keep hearing, especially in many cases from the financial management community, is not quite yet.
And I think that's fair. Some of them can do the job, and some will have to learn to do the job, and some won't be able to do the job. The other thing I really didn't like about this draft bill was it emphasizes keeping score on IT investments at the website, the federal dashboard. And so if OMB is having a problem with people complying with keeping score, in essence, they should deal with that offline. That won't move the rock in any of these agencies. That's not going to further things in the mission.
What else do you see in this bill, Robert, that's either good or bad?
It brings needed attention to what the chief acquisition officers tell us. Grant Thornton surveys acquisition officers every year, and they say the number one challenge is recruiting talent, recruiting and retaining the talent they need to perform these big acquisitions. So this bill focuses some needed attention on that challenge.
Is that ironic, maybe a little bit, that a bill that is named IT, it has the IT before the acquisition, primarily seems to be functionally focused on the acquisition part?
I think it makes perfect sense. I think it makes perfect sense because you've got right now big acquisitions that aren't working. One of the major factors in that shortcoming is the talent we have to manage them.
So I think we all agree across government as being consultants or people who've worked and guided before that the acquisition process needs some revamping, right? We agree with that.
Yeah.
And the CIOs need some authority. The question is, well, how will this bill end and how will it benefit then these two groups?
Well, you know, it probably is not going to solve the problem.
Right.
Nothing ever got solved by a bill being written, but it'll bring some attention to some issues, and how it's implemented will be a major factor in its success.
The Absolutely. Key then, though, becomes the leadership at the individual agencies as to whether people actually do hear that attention that's paid and do something about it, right?
That's right. And we're a big government. It'll be inconsistent, but this will be an opportunity for a new crop of IT leaders to emerge.
Absolutely.
Bob Otto's most important federal news story of the week is from NextGov. The headline is Oversight Committee Passes IT Reform Act, Giving CIOs Budget Authority. It and all of our stories will be up later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important federal news story of the week is selected by Robert Shea. We'll wrap up the federal news countdown in just a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
About your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Enzymatic Therapy and Nordic Naturals. The Washington Capitals and Skydex Technologies have teamed up to raise money for the nonprofit organization TAPS through the sale of Courage caps and T-shirts. TAPS is a tragedy assistance resource for anyone who suffered the loss of a military loved one in service to our country. Courage caps and T-shirts are now available for purchase, and all proceeds will benefit TAPS. Help support the families and loved ones of our honored military men and women. Go to WashingtonCaps.com to purchase your Courage cap and T-shirt today.
The Federal News Radio United Way Community Spotlight for March is the Washington Regional Transplant Community. Did you know that every day people have the opportunity to be a hero? Becoming a hero is as simple as registering to become an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Do it whenever you obtain or renew your driver's license, or register online now at beadonor.org. You might just save a life. For more info, visit federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio charities are fed by Papa John's.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week, featuring the three most important federal news stories of the week, is selected by Bob Otto of Agilex and Robert Shea of Grant Thornton. And Robert, your most important federal news story of the week is Jack Moore's story on federalnewsradio.com. And the headline, did you know that we call Jack Moore 7 because his real name is Andrew Jackson Moore? He was named after the 7th president of the United States.
Oh, that's good to know.
So
that's
we've nicknamed him. I know your former boss like nicknames a lot, so exactly. I thought you might enjoy that. The headline of Jack's story is shutdown averted, pay freeze extended as Congress passes 2013 funding bill. And this kind of takes me back in my first thought to where what we talked about earlier about the degree of positivity that we can have about what's going on Capitol Hill, because this was a case where everybody decided we want to get this done. We're going to eat some things that we don't like in exchange for things that we do like. And we won't have this shutdown countdown fever thing that we've had for the last couple of continuing resolution ends.
And, you know, it's actually something that's not front page news. This was story's a little bit difficult to follow. Getting progress updates on what was happening was a little hard. This is notable for its lack of drama.
Mm-hmm.
All of the last CRs have been done at the very last second. This one's done with 6 days ahead of time. So I do think it's an example of people being tired, wanting to get things done. And, you know, we got savings with the sequester. We've got a big budget deal to accomplish. Let's get this thing done so that we can focus on bigger things.
And what I heard more than anything else, Bob, from people in government was, I don't like the idea of the cuts. It's going to make things harder at my agency, but at least we'll know what's going to happen next, which is not a luxury that people at agencies have had for quite a while.
Absolutely. And I think that everybody's tired of waiting to the last minute to know what's going on.
But it's also important to note that, you know, even though there were the sequester is kept in place, mm-hmm. there are bumps in spending. Most to the Department of Defense, which gets an additional $10 billion in its O&M accounts to help address sequester. But the Ag FDA subcommittee's bills are bumped 1.4%, financial services 1%, transportation HUD 0.7%. Labor HHS education bills, 0.1% across the board. So except for a couple of the bills, most agencies are going to see a bump in their overall appropriations, which is going to soften the blow of sequester considerably.
And that's the strategy that I have heard a lot of people in agencies saying they thought would come out of this is, I was taken by the fact I was at the Pentagon on Monday and just asking people at random, what do you think about furloughs and so on? And everybody's response was the same, no matter what level they were at. I don't think it's probably going to be quite as bad as it sounds like it's going to be right now. And that seems to be what was borne out in what we learned about yesterday, Bob.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you think overall this portends, though, for the September 30th deadline for fiscal 2014? Either one of you. Bob, go first.
Well, at this point, I really think that, you know, they're going to get a budget, and I think they're working on it now, and everybody's tired of not getting something accomplished. I think it'll be a give and take, and we'll see a budget come out, and the agencies are going to be impacted. That's the bottom line.
Something that I thought that kind of goes along with the idea of this was the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee hearing this week on the costs of crisis budgeting. Senator Carper and Coburn led that hearing, and that was the first time that I could recall, Robert, that a congressional committee really focused on that piece of this, which is how detrimental this is to the operation of the agencies to do this in stops and starts and last-minute deadlines and pieces and all of that.
It's a big deal. You spend a lot of time spinning your wheels, as I think Bob alluded to, focusing on things that are outside the mission. You can't plan long-term projects if you can't even get a six-month budget approved. So, and the amount of time people are spending working on producing the bills, producing the budgets, responding to requests is a real distraction.
Now, this bill also includes a little bit of a tug of war over your former agency, Bob. The Postal Service in the middle of this, because Jack's story says while the bill is technically silent, on five-day delivery. Previous iterations of the continuing resolution have banned the agency from eliminating a day of service delivery. Meanwhile, some lawmakers say USPS still has the legal authority to continue with its new delivery schedule. That would be the one that would eliminate first-class mail delivery on Saturdays, because it doesn't eliminate Saturday delivery entirely, but modifies what it delivers on that day. So they're kind of stuck in the middle and still trying to figure out legally what this really means for them.
Yeah, you know, and I spent a lot of years at the Postal Service, and I love the place, and they really do have a well-thought-out plan on how to, in essence, reduce cost and staff, and Congress just needs to support them and move forward on this.
The bottom line on this is we're set now until September 30th. The general consensus in this room, and to be fair, among other experts that I talked to, is that something will happen, as you said, Bob, before the September 30th deadline, that we may have actually see regular order. The only kind of fly in the ointment right now seems to be the debt limit debate. That is, I think the latest number date I saw on the debt limit is May 19th or somewhere in that situation. Is it possible that that could foul up the works?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The question will be what will the Republicans try to extract in exchange for approval of an increase in the debt limit?
When we will, of course, continue to watch that, and we'll rely on your expert observations to understand it all. Thank you very much, Bob Otto of Agilex. Great to see you as always.
Always love being here, and I wanted to remind you again that Agilex has a website with this watchathon that we will donate a dollar for every time you go on there and look at our services.
Agilex.com/safespot, and we'll link it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, because it's for a good cause. Robert Shave, Grant Thornton, terrific to see you as always. Anything you want to plug quickly?
No. Agile, I'm going to go and just press that button a bunch of times.
Just keep watching it.
Absolutely.
It's terrific to see both of you, gentlemen. Thank the you. Federal News Countdown's archived later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. All the stories that we talked about will be linked up there, too. And hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose coming next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.